6. No more of mirth. All within is dark as night, in the windows is no light, and no murmur at the door, so frequent on its hinge before. Close the door, the shutters close, or through the windows we shall see the nakedness and vacancy of the dark deserted house. Come away. No more of mirth is here, or merrymaking sound. The house was builded of the earth, and shall fall again to ground. Alfred Lord Tennyson, The Deserted House.
This cannot be where they live,
Lucy whispered, half in amazement, half in horror. Her mother had described Chiswick House to her once, what it had been like years ago, when Tessa had attended a ball there disguised as Jessamine. Her parents couldn't talk about the ball, in fact, without shooting each other fond, syrupy looks. It was quite disgusting. Uncle Gabriel had described the house too, in a much more exciting and suitable story about the way that he, Aunt Cecily, Uncle Jem, Lucy's parents and Uncle Gideon had dispatched the evil Benedict Lightwood, who had turned into a demonic worm and marauded through the Lightwood Gardens. It was a story with a great deal of blood and excitement, and it had been very clear, to Lucy at least, that the gardens had been glorious. The manor house itself had been glorious, white stone spreading green lawns down to the Thames, gorgeous Greek follies seeming to float above the ground. There had been Italian gardens and moonlight-washed balconies, and tall, proud pillars. A famous reproduction of the Venus de Medici from the Uffizi galleries in Florence. A magnificent avenue of cedars sweeping up to the house.
My mother said she'd heard it had fallen into disrepair, but I did not expect this,
Cordelia whispered back. Her gaze, like Lucy's, was glued to the outside of the massive gates that closed off the property. Latin words were etched across the top of the ironwork. Ultima forsan. The end is closer than you think. They sent a shiver down Lucy's spine. She put her hand to her waist where her weapons belt rested. Bridget had left serif blades, belts and steelies in the carriage for them, and they had marked themselves carefully with various runes. Strength, stealth, night vision. One never could be too careful in a possibly haunted place. Lucy only wished they had been able to change into gear. They were still wearing their dresses from the picnic, torn and bloodstained.
There is disrepair, and then there's disaster, Lucy said, reaching for her steely. How can Grace bear to live here?
I suppose she finds other things to make her happy, Cordelia said in a subdued voice, as Lucy scratched an open rune on the gates and they swung open, scattering a powder of red rust. They stepped forward onto the broken stones and overgrowth of what had once been a gorgeous avenue lined with potted cypress and cedar trees. The rot of dying cedar filled the air now and tickled the back of Lucy's throat. The trees overhead had grown into each other, their branches tangling, bending and snapping. Dead branches littered the ground. As they came out from the avenue and into the broad circular drive in front of the house, Lucy was struck by the destroyed beauty of the manor. A double set of stairs, wonderfully constructed, led up to a broad entryway. Blackened vines twisted their way around fluted columns. If she cast her gaze up, she could see the balconies her mother had spoken of, but they had been taken over by clusters of thorns.
Like Sleeping Beauty's castle, Lucy murmured. I was just thinking that, said Cordelia. Did you ever read the older fairy tales? I remember them being much more frightening. There was one where Sleeping Beauty's palace was ringed all around with sharp briars, and the bodies of the princes who tried to get through hung on the thorns when they died, and their bones whitened in the sun.
Delightful, said Lucy. I shall be sure to include that in a book.
Not in the beautiful Cordelia, you won't, said Cordelia, moving up to inspect the house more closely.
Lucy, there isn't a single light on. not a single bit of illumination. Maybe they are not at home.
Look, there,
Lucy said and pointed. I saw a light darting across one of the windows. If you do not want to knock on the door, you need not. I admit, it is quite alarming here.
Cordelia squared her shoulders.
I am not alarmed.
Lucy hid a smile.
Then I am going to seek a ghost while you distract the inhabitants. We will meet back at the gates in a quarter hour.
Cordelia nodded and began to climb the cracked marble steps to the front door. The sound of her knocking faded as Lucy slipped around the house to the back, where the grass sloped down toward the dark water of the river. She found herself looking up at the stone wall of the manor, cracked with age and veined through with a million thick and twisting vines. Lucy took a running jump and seized the vines. She began to climb quickly, hand over hand, the way she had always climbed the rope in the training room, hoping to find an open window she could climb through. To her delight, halfway up the wall she realized she had reached a balcony. Even better. Lucy pulled herself up and over the balcony railing and tumbled onto the ground. She leaped up before any of the thorny briars could penetrate her cloak and give her a nasty scratch. She felt terribly pleased with herself. She wondered if her father would have been proud if he'd known how handily she'd climbed the wall. Probably not, she had to conclude. Probably he simply would have been murderous that she was here at all. Parents really were unable to see what their children could accomplish, alas. Lucy reached for the handle of the cracked French doors, their glass smeared with black dirt and greenish rot. She pushed inward. The door flew open, showing a massive, empty ballroom beyond. Well, nearly empty. Jesse Blackthorne stood in front of her, his green eyes blazing with rage.
What in Raziel's name are you doing here? He hissed.
The Shadow Realm was piercingly cold. James had never felt the chill before. He had always stood somehow apart from the dark place. But now he was within. It was no longer silent either. He could hear wind blowing and a distant sound like shattering glass. All around him there was blowing dust. Perhaps this place had once been an ocean and had dried up, blowing away with the harsh wind. Certainly there seemed nothing in front of him but an endless sea of sand. He turned, wondering if he could see any path back to the ballroom. To his surprise, he saw instead the skyline of London, the dome of St. Paul's, the crenellations of the Tower of London, and the familiar arches of Tower Bridge. Tower Bridge itself seemed to glow eerily red. James coughed. There was dust in his mouth, bitter as salt.
Bitter as salt.
He knelt down and scooped a handful of the bone-coloured dirt of this world into his hand. He had never been able to touch anything here before, but the dirt was solid, dusty like any other dirt. He slid a handful into his trouser pocket and rose to his feet as the vision of London faded. There was only darkness around him now, lit by a faint, eerie glow whose source he could not see. Trackless waste led in all directions. He tried to push down his rising terror, the part of him that said he would die here, in utter darkness, frozen to the spot with no path to follow. And then he saw it, a tiny flicker of golden firefly light in the distance. He moved toward it, slowly at first, and then faster as the light became a blaze. The cold began to vanish, and the scent of living things surrounded him, roots and leaves and flowers, as he stepped back into the world again. Cordelia had almost given up knocking when the front doors of Chiswick House finally swung open. Grace stood on the threshold. Much to Cordelia's surprise, she was alone. Ladies did not open their own front doors. Servants performed that task. But then, what ordinary human being, even one with the sight, would be willing to work in such a place? No wonder Grace had insisted she be picked up and dropped off at the gates. Grace was wearing the same dress she'd worn to the picnic earlier, though the hem was torn and it was stained with grass. Not that Cordelia minded. There was something humanizing about Grace exhibiting even small imperfections. Grace carried a fiery torch in her right hand. Behind her, the foyer of the house was dark. There was a dank smell in the air. Grace stared at Cordelia, her expression caught between blankness and surprise.
"Miss Carstairs," she said finally.
She did not invite Cordelia in, or ask her why she was there. Having acknowledged Cordelia's presence, she seemed content to remain as they were. Cordelia cleared her throat.
"Miss Blackthorne," she said.
Was this a distraction? Somewhere Lucy was creeping about, seeking a ghost. Cordelia had rather thought Tatiana would come to the door too, but she would have to make do with Grace.
"I came to see if you were all right after today's events," said Cordelia. "As a fellow newcomer to London, I know it can be difficult."
"I am quite all right," Grace said.
Cordelia had the unnerving feeling that behind Grace's blank expression, she was sizing Cordelia up.
"We are not so dissimilar, you and I," Cordelia said. "Both of us travelled a long way to get here."
"Actually, there's a portal in the greenhouse at Blackthorne Manor," Grace said coldly. "It leads to the garden here, so it was a short journey."
"Ah, well, that is different. But neither of us know the enclave well, or the young people in this city aside from Lucy and James. We are simply trying to make our lives here as best they can be."
The torchlight cast strange shadows on Grace's countenance.
"We are not alike," she said without any anger. "I have obligations you cannot understand."
"Obligations?" The word startled Cordelia. "You cannot mean...
James. You cannot mean James."
"An understanding with a man might be considered an obligation, but only if the relationship was unwanted. Since Grace had entered into hers with James secretly, without her mother's knowledge, surely it must be what she desired."
Grace gave a tight smile.
"Did you come here because you find the situation amusing?"
"I don't know what you mean."
With a sigh, Grace began to turn away. Cordelia reached out to catch at her sleeve. Grace gave a low cry of pain and snatched her arm away.
"I don't..."
Cordelia stared. She had touched Grace only lightly.
"Are you hurt? Can I help?"
Grace shook her head violently as a dark shadow loomed up behind her. It was Tatiana Blackthorne. Tatiana was the same age as Cecily Lightwood, but looked years older. The lines of hatred and anger cut into her face like knife marks. She wore a stained fuchsia dress, her grey-brown hair loose and cascading. She looked at Cordelia with loathing.
"Just like your cousin," she sneered. "No sense of propriety at all."
She took hold of the door.
"Get off my property," she finished,
and slammed it loudly in Cordelia's face. Cordelia was making her way back toward the gates when she heard the noise. She had supposed there was nothing to do but wait for Lucy in the carriage. Tatiana had ordered her off the property after all. Really, she was most peculiar. There had been a glittering hatred in her eyes when she'd mentioned Jem that unnerved Cordelia. How could you hate people for so long? Especially when you were blaming them for something that, while terrible, had not been their fault. Benedict Lightwood had become a monster by the time Will, Jem, and the others had slain him. Many choices were not easy, they were near impossible, and there was no point hating people who were forced to make them. The noise interrupted her thoughts. It was like the hissing of angry voices. It seemed to be coming from the greenhouse in the front gardens, a wood and glass structure with a cupola on the roof. Its windows were dark, no doubt as filthy as the rest of the house was. But why would there be anyone in there? It was night, and no one lived at the manor save Grace and Tatiana. Cordelia hesitated, then unwrapped the bandages on her hands. To her relief, the salve had mostly healed her burns. She wiggled her unbound fingers and drew Cortana from its sheath before creeping to the door of the greenhouse. To her surprise, the door swung open without the creak of rusty hinges. It seemed that alone among the artifacts of the gardens, the overgrown follies, the sunken pit of thorns and brush that had once been a small amphitheatre, the greenhouse was still in use. She moved inside, into a world of deep shadows and the heavy smell of rotting greenery. It was quite dark. Only the little moonlight shimmering through the dirty glass illuminated the space. She slipped her witchlight out of her pocket with her free hand. It had been given to her on her 13th birthday by Alistair, a cool, round piece of adamas carved by the Iron Sisters, alive with the promise of light inside it. She closed her hand around the stone and it flared into life. She kept the light under control, not wanting the greenhouse to glow like a torch, betraying her presence. The light was a dim yellow, illuminating a path that led between rows of what had once been potted orange trees. The roof rose high above, disappearing into shadow. Shapes flitted back and forth in the heights. Bats, Cordelia suspected. She didn't mind bats. There were plenty in the countryside. She was less enthusiastic about spiders. Thick silvery webs wound between the trees. She made a face as she moved down the path, which was at least well trod. Someone had been here recently. She could see the prints of heeled shoes in the packed dirt. The webs were empty, though. They hung, shimmering like the lace of an abandoned wedding dress, vacant of spiders or even the bodies of trapped bugs. Strange, Cordelia thought, glancing about. It was easy to imagine how this place had once been beautiful, the woodwork painted white, the glass letting in glimpses of blue sky. There were few flowers left now, though she spied the purplish petals and darkly budded berries of nightshade plants scattered beneath the shadow of a single great tree that still rose, stark and leafless, against a far wall. Naughty, Cordelia thought. It was frowned on for shadow hunters to grow plants like nightshade, which provided key ingredients in dark magic spells. There were plants she didn't recognize as well, something like a fleshy white tulip, and something else a bit like a red Venus flytrap. None looked as if they'd been cultivated recently. Weeds grew up and around everything. A gardener's nightmare. The heavy scent in the air had intensified, like foliage that had been left to rot, a dying garden. Cordelia peered ahead of her and saw thickening darkness and a twitch of movement. She ducked just as a dark talon whipped by over her head. "Demon!" screamed a silent voice inside her head. The stink in the air, half covered by the smell of rotting leaves, the lack of birds or even spiders inside the greenhouse. Of course. There was movement in the darkness. Cordelia caught sight of a great misshapen face looming over hers, bleached and fanged and bony, before the demon hissed and reared back from the light. Cordelia turned to run, but a curling tentacle whipped around her ankle, tightening like a noose. She was jerked off her feet, hitting the ground hard. Her witchlight went flying. Cordelia screamed as she was dragged into the shadows. Lucy drew herself up to her full height, which was not very impressive. In all her family, she was the shortest. "I think it should be clear," she said. "I am creeping about, spying." Jesse's eyes flashed. "Oh, for—" He stepped back. "Come inside, quickly." Lucy did as he asked, and found herself standing inside a vast room. Jesse stood in front of her, in the same clothes he had worn at the ball, and before that, in the forest. One rarely saw a gentleman without a jacket, and certainly not in his shirt sleeves unless he was your brother or some other family member. She would not have noticed his state of undress when she was so young, but she was very conscious of it now. A metal disc, A locket, perhaps, winked in the hollow of his throat, its surface etched with a circlet of thorns.
"You're mad to come here," he said. "It's dangerous."
Lucy looked around. The size of the room, the roof vaulting overhead, only served to make it feel more deserted. Moonlight shone in through a broken window. The walls had once been dark blue, but were nearly black now with a fine grime of dirt. Massive tangles of shimmering fabric, now occluded with dust, hung from the ceiling, swaying in the breeze from the broken windows. She moved toward the center of the room, where a huge crystal chandelier hung. It looked as if it had once been fashioned into the shape of a glittering spider, but the years had taken its crystals and scattered them on the floor like hardened teardrops. She bent down to pick one up, a false diamond, but still beautiful, all glimmer and dust.
"This was the ballroom," she said in a soft voice.
"It still is," said Jessie, and she whirled to face him.
He was standing in an entirely different place than he had been before, though she hadn't heard him move. He was all black and white. The only colour on him was the silver blackthorn ring on his scarred right hand and his green eyes.
"Oh, it is rotted away now. It gives my mother pleasure to let time take this place, to let the years wither and destroy the pride of the Lightwoods."
"Will she ever stop hating them?"
"It isn't just the Lightwoods she hates," said Jessie.
"She hates everyone she holds responsible for the death of my father. Her brothers, your father and mother, Jem Carstairs, and beyond even that, the Clave. She holds them responsible for what happened to me."
"What did happen to you?" Lucy asked, slipping the broken crystal into the pocket of her cloak.
Jessie was prowling about the room. He looked like a black cat in the dimness, long and lithe with shaggy dark hair. Lucy turned to watch him as he faded in and out of the shadows. The chandelier swung, its remaining crystals sending glittering bolts of light through the room, scattering sparks in the darkness. For a moment, Lucy thought she saw a young man in the shadows, a young man with pale blonde hair and a hard twist to his unforgiving mouth. There was something familiar about him.
"How long have you been able to see the dead?" Jessie asked.
Lucy blinked, and the blonde boy vanished.
"Most Herondales can see ghosts," she said. "I've always been able to see Jessamine. So can James. I hadn't thought of it as anything special."
Jessie had moved to stand under the chandelier. For someone so calm, he had a surprising amount of restlessness.
"No one but my mother and sister have seen me since you saw me in Brosselin's 6 years ago."
Lucy frowned.
"You are a ghost, but not like any other ghost. Even my father and brother can't see you. It's so odd. Are you buried?"
"It's very forward to ask a gentleman if he's buried," said Jessie.
"How old are you?"
Lucy was undeterred. Jessie sighed and looked up at the chandelier.
"I have two ages," he said. "I am 24 and I am 17.
"No one has two ages."
"I do," he said, unruffled. "When I was 17, I died. But my mother had prepared."
Lucy licked her dry lips.
"What do you mean, prepared?"
He gestured at himself. "This, what you are looking at, is a manifestation of my soul. After my death, my mother told the Silent Brothers she would never give them my remains, that she refused to allow them to touch me again, to burn my body to ashes. I do not know if they questioned what she did then, but I know she brought a warlock into the room in the hours after I died to preserve and to safeguard my physical body. My soul was cut free to wander between the real world and the spirit realm. Thus, I do not age, I do not breathe, and I live only during the nights."
"Which you spend haunting ballrooms and wandering about the forest?"
He gave her a dark look. Usually I spend my time reading. Both the Manor House in Idris and Chiswick House have well-stocked libraries. I've even read my grandfather Benedict's unpublished papers. They were hidden in the chimney. Horrid stuff. He was obsessed with demons. Socializing with them, crossbreeding them.
Ugh,
said Lucy, waving a quelling hand. Benedict Lightwood's peculiarities were well known.
What do you do during the day?
He smiled faintly. I vanish.
Really? Vanish where?
You have a great deal of questions.
Yes, said Lucy. In fact, I came here to ask you a question. What did you mean last night when you said there is death here? Nothing happened at the ball.
But today it did, said Jessie. Grace told me.
Lucy tried to imagine Grace and Jessie sitting in this shadowy room, exchanging the news of their days. I saw a demon attack in Regent's Park during the daytime.
Did you now? Well, I didn't do much. As you know, I'm still dead.
She cleared her throat. So you can see the future?
Jessie paused. He looked made out of moonlight and cobwebs, shadows at his temples, in the hollow of his throat, at his wrists. Before I reveal anything else, he said, you must swear you will tell no one about me. Not your brother, not Cordelia, not your parents. Understood?
A secret?
Lucy loved and hated secrets. She was always honoured to be entrusted with one, and then was immediately tempted to tell it.
Why must it be a secret? Many know I can see ghosts.
But, as you have so perspicaciously noted, I am not an ordinary ghost, said Jessie.
I am kept in this state by necromantic magic, and the Clave forbids such things. Should they find out, they would search for my body and burn it, and I would be dead in truth. And forever.
Lucy swallowed.
So you still hope? You think you might return to full life?
Jessie leaned back against the wall, his arms folded. You have not promised.
I give my word. I will tell no one about you. Now explain what you meant last night with your warning.
She had thought he might smirk or say something mocking, but he looked very serious. Being what I am puts me between two worlds, he said. I belong here, and yet I don't. Sometimes I can glimpse other things that do not quite belong. Other ghosts, of course. And demons. There was a sinister presence in that ballroom, and I believe it is the same one that returned today.
But why?
Lucy whispered. Jessie shook his head. That I do not know.
Will they return? Lucy began.
There was a flare of light. Jessie turned, surprised, toward the back wall of the house. The French doors had lit up, glowing a startling white. Lucy darted to one of the windows and looked out. She could see the gardens clearly in all their tangled darkness. A small distance away was the greenhouse, and it was glimmering like a star. Witchlight. A moment later, the light had winked out. Cold fear clawed at Lucy's chest.
Daisy,
she breathed, and tore the doors open. Tumbling out onto the balcony without another look at Jessie, she flung herself at the wall and began to climb down. Cordelia scrabbled at the ground with her free hand, her fingers sinking into the dirt as she was hauled into the shadows. The demon tentacle wrapped around her leg was agonizing. It felt as if a million small teeth were biting into her skin, but more horrifying was the heat on the back of her neck, the breath of whatever was hovering over her. Something caught her hand.
Lucy, she thought.
She shrieked as she came to a sudden stop, the painful cord around her leg tightening, jerking her body sideways. She reached up to clutch the hand that had caught hers and saw who it belonged to. The greenhouse was dim, but she knew him instantly. A shock of black hair, pale gold eyes, the face she had memorized. James.
He wasn't wearing gear. He was in trousers and shirt sleeves, and his face was pale with shock. Still, he was gripping her wrist firmly, hauling her toward the door, as the cord around her leg tried to drag her farther into the greenhouse. If she did not move fast, she would be torn in two. Using James's grip as an anchor, Cordelia twisted around to free Cortana. It had been trapped beneath her, and surged downward with the blade in her hand. She slashed the sword through the tentacle holding her. Cortana sparked gold as it cut through demon flesh. There was a deep, rumbling cry, and suddenly Cordelia was free, sliding toward James in a welter of ichor and her own blood. The pain lanced through her like fire as he hauled her to her feet. There was nothing elegant about it, nothing of a gentleman helping a lady. This was the urgency of battle, hands grasping and yanking in desperation. She fell against James, who caught at her. Her witchlight pulsed dimly in the dirt where she had dropped it. "What the blazes, Daisy?" James began. She whirled, pulling out of his grasp to snatch up the witchlight. In its renewed glow, she realized that what she had thought was a massive tree rising against the far wall of the greenhouse was something very different. It was a demon, but not like any she had seen before. From a distance, it almost seemed a butterfly or moth, pinned to the wall, wings outspread. A second, closer look revealed that its wings were membranous extensions, shot through with pulsing red veins. Where the wings joined together, they rose into a sort of central stalk, crowned by three heads. Each head was like a wolf's, but with black, insectile eyes. Extending from the bottom of the stalk was a knot of long tentacles like the limbs of a squid. Clustered with membranous seed pods, they hit the floor of the greenhouse and stretched out along the dirt like roots. They wound between the trees and the potted plants. They choked the bases of flowering bushes. They reached across the floor toward Cordelia and James. The one that Cordelia had severed lay on the ground, pulsing slow freshets of ichor. Not swiftly, but inexorably, the others slipped after it. She dropped her witchlight into her pocket. If she was going to need to fight, she wanted both hands free. James had apparently had a similar thought. He slid a dagger from his weapons belt and sighted along his arm. His eyes narrowed. "Daisy," he said without looking at her. "Run." Did he actually mean to face the thing down with a throwing blade? It would be suicide. Cordelia seized his free arm and bolted, yanking James after her. Too startled to hang back, he followed. She glanced back once and saw the boiling rush of black talons behind them, causing her to put on a frantic burst of speed. Good Raziel, how enormous was this greenhouse! She tore past the last of the potted orange trees and came up short. She could see the door at last, but her heart sank. It was wrapped around with black talons, curving along the walls, their tips pressing against the door, holding it shut. Her hand tightened on James's wrist. "Is that the door?" he whispered. She shot him a look of surprise. How could he not know? Hadn't he come in the same way she had? "Yes," she said. "I have a seraph blade, but only one. We could try." James hurled the dagger, the runes along its blade shining. He moved so fast it was like a blur. One moment he was holding the blade and the next it had plunged into the demon's membranous wing, shattering the glass behind it. Shrieking, the demon began to pull itself away from the wall. James swore and drew two more blades. They were arcs of silver spinning from his hands. The demon screeched, a high and horrible noise as the knives plunged into its torso. The creature spasmed. It seemed almost to be crumbling, its leathery seed pods pattering to the ground like rain. It gave a last choking hiss and vanished. No longer held closed, the greenhouse door swung wide. Amid the shattered glass and the stench of demon blood, James ducked swiftly through the door, pulling Cordelia with him.
Together they tumbled out into the night. They raced away from the greenhouse, through overgrown grass and tangled weeds. When they were some distance away in a clearing near the entrance to what had once been the Italian gardens, James came up short. Cordelia nearly stumbled into him. She was dizzy, her vision blurring. The pain in her leg had returned. She slid Cortana into its sheath at her back and sank to the ground. They were in a small hollow of overgrowth. The greenhouse was a great dark star in the distance, capping a rise of garden. Dark trees leaned together overhead, their branches knotted. The air was clean and cool. James went down on his knees, facing her in the grass. "Daisy, let me see." She nodded. James placed his hands lightly on her ankle, above her low leather boots, and began to raise the hem of her dress. The trim of her petticoat was soaked through with blood, and Cordelia couldn't hold back a small noise as her ankle was bared. The skin looked as if it had been torn with a serrated knife. The top of her boot was drenched in blood. "It looks bad," James said gently, "but it's just a cut to the skin. There's no poison." He drew his steely from his belt. With infinite care, he touched the tip to her calf. The horror, Cordelia thought, that her mother would have experienced at the idea of a boy touching her daughter's leg, and traced the outlines of a healing rune. It felt as if someone had poured cool water over her ankle. She watched as the injured flesh began to knit itself back together, slashed skin sealing up, as if weeks of healing had been compressed into seconds. "You look as if you've never seen what an Irazi can do," James said, a small quirk to the corner of his mouth. "Have you not been injured before?"
"Not this badly," said Cordelia. "I know I should have... You must be thinking what a baby I've been. And that demon. Ugh, I should never have let it knock me off my feet."
"Stop that," James said firmly. "Everyone gets pummeled by a demon now and again. If they didn't, we wouldn't need healing runes." He smiled, that rare, lovely smile that cut through the mask and lit up his face. "I was thinking that you reminded me a bit of Catherine Earnshaw from Wuthering Heights. My mother has a favourite passage about how she was bitten by a bulldog. She did not yell out, no. She would have scorned to do it if she had been spitted on the horns of a mad cow." Cordelia had not read Wuthering Heights in years, but she felt herself smile. Incredible that James could make her smile after what they'd just been through.
"That was impressive," she said, "to dispatch such a sizable demon with only throwing knives."
James threw his head back with a low laugh. "Give the credit to Christopher," he said. "He made these blades for me. He spent years working on ways of developing new substances that can bear even the strongest runes. Most metals would shatter. It does mean there's hell to pay whenever I lose one, though," he added, looking ruefully at the greenhouse.
"Oh, no," Cordelia said firmly. "You can't go back in there."
"I wouldn't leave you," he said simply, melting her heart. "Daisy, if I tell you something, will you promise not to tell anyone else?" She could not have said no when he called her Daisy. "You know that I can turn into a shadow," he said. "That at first I had little control over the change." She nodded. She would never forget the way he had reached out for her when he had the scalding fever, the way she had tried to hold his hand, but it had turned into vapor. "For years, I have worked with your cousin Jem to learn to control it. The change, the visions." He bit at his lower lip. "And yet tonight I entered the shadow realm under my own will. Once inside, it brought me here."
"I don't understand," Cordelia said. "Why here, of all places?"
His eyes searched hers. "I saw a light within the shadows," he said. "I followed it. I believe it was the light of Cortana." She fought the urge to reach back and touch the blade just to make sure it was still there.
"It is a special sword," she admitted. My father always said that we did not know the extent of what it could do.
When I landed in the greenhouse, I'd no idea where I was, he said. I was choking on dust, white-grey dust like burnt bones. I brought a handful of the stuff back from the other world.
He reached into his trouser pocket and brought out a pinch of what looked like ash.
I'm going to bring it to Henry and Christopher. Perhaps they can test what is in it. I have never been able to bring anything back from the Shadow Realm before. Perhaps it happened because I went into the realm willingly.
Do you think it's because I was fighting the demon, with Cortana, that you were drawn to this place? She said. Whatever kind of demon it was.
James glanced again at the greenhouse. It was a Cerberus demon, and it's probably been here for years.
I've seen pictures of Cerberus demons before.
Cordelia wobbled to her feet. James rose and put his arm around her to steady her. She tensed at his nearness.
They don't look like that.
Benedict Lightwood was a great enthusiast for demons, said James. When they cleared this place out after he died, they found a dozen Cerberus demons. They're watchdog creatures. He'd placed them here to protect his family and property. I suppose they missed the one in the greenhouse.
Cordelia moved away from James slightly, though it was the last thing she wanted to do. And you think over the years it changed, became more a part of the place?
Have you read On the Origin of Species? Asked James. It is all about how animals adapt their environments through generations. Demons don't have generations. They don't die unless we kill them.
This one adapted to its surroundings. Do you think there are more around?
The raw pain in Cordelia's ankle had faded to a manageable ache as she twisted around, looking up and down the garden for Lucy.
We could be in danger. Lucy!
James went white. Lucy! Cordelia's heart skipped a beat.
By the angel! Lucy and I came here together.
Of all the foolish! Suddenly he was worried. She could see it in his face, his eyes.
Why?
Lucy wanted to make sure Grace was all right, and she asked me to come with her, lied Cordelia. In fact, she went into the house where Grace and Tatiana are. Rather foolishly, I wandered off to see the gardens.
An odd look of utter shock passed across James's face, as if he had just remembered something terribly important.
Grace, he said.
I know you might wish to go see her, said Cordelia, but I must warn you that Tatiana is in a very bad mood.
James continued to look silently stunned. There was a rustle of noise and Lucy burst out of the overgrowth.
Cordelia! She gasped, her face lighting with relief. And Jamie!
Her face wrinkled up. She came to a dead stop.
Oh dear, Jamie, what are you doing here?
As if you have a perfectly reasonable excuse for lurching about somebody else's property in the dead of night, James said, transforming from a worried young man into a towering older brother in a matter of seconds. Papa and Mama are going to murder you.
Only if you tell them, Lucy's eyes flashed. How else are they going to find out?
Of course they will, said James darkly. The existence of a Cerberus demon in the greenhouse could hardly...
Lucy's eyes rounded. A what in the where?
Cerberus demon in the greenhouse, James repeated. Where, incidentally, you sent your future Parabatai completely alone.
Oh no, it's all right, I went in on my own, Cordelia said, and started. I was going to move the carriage from the gates. If Tatiana looks out a window and sees it, she'll be furious.
We'd better go, Lucy said. James, will you be coming with us or going back the way you came? She squinted.
What is the way you came?
Never you mind, said James with his crooked smile. Go take the carriage. I'll follow along shortly and see you both at home.
I imagine James is staying because he wants to see Grace,
Lucy said in a low voice as she and Cordelia hurried back along the overgrown pathways of the Chiswick House gardens. They ducked through the gates and found the carriage exactly where it had been before,
Xanthos seeming to stand guard. Moon around under her window or whatever. I hope Tatiana doesn't bite off his head. She certainly doesn't seem to want visitors, said Cordelia as they clambered into the carriage. I felt rather bad for Grace. James used to feel pity for her, said Lucy as the carriage started to move. Then it seems that somehow he fell in love with her, which is very odd, really. I've always thought of pity as the opposite of love. She broke off, her face going white. Light was visible through the tangled branches of trees. Figures were hurrying across the road toward the manor house.
It's Papa,
Lucy said, in a grim tone, as if she'd just seen another Cerberus demon.
In fact, it's everyone.
Cordelia stared. The road was suddenly full of witchlight. It shone upon the dark gates of the house, upon the rows of beech trees on either side of the road, upon the ragged outline of the manor itself. Lucy might have exaggerated slightly in saying everyone was there, but certainly a large group of shadow hunters on foot was bearing down on the Blackthorns' residence. Cordelia could see familiar faces, Gabriel and Cecily Lightwood, Charles Fairchild's red hair, and, of course, Will Herondale.
What are they doing here? She wondered.
Should we go back? Warn James to make himself scarce? But the carriage had already begun speeding up, Xanthos trotting them quickly away while the last of the enclave members poured through the gates. As the house receded in the distance, Lucy shook her head, looking grim.
He wouldn't thank us for it, she said.
She sighed.
He'd just be angry we let ourselves get in trouble too. Besides, James is a boy. He won't be in the same sort of hot water if they do catch him wandering about the place. If they found us, you'd be in awful trouble with your mother. It isn't in the least fair, but it's the truth.
Moonlight filtered into the greenhouse through shattered glass panes. The Nephilim were long gone, having made their examination of the place and their demands of the mistress of the house. It was finally quiet. The seed pods the Cerberus demon had dropped in its death throes began to shake and tremble, like eggs about to hatch. Their leathery casings split as thorn-sharp teeth tore them open from within. Covered with a sticky film and hissing like cockroaches, the newborn demons tumbled to the packed earth floor of the greenhouse, each no bigger than a child's hand. But they would not remain that size for long.